Welcome, beautiful one, to the Remarkable Souls podcast. I'm your host, Ann Ribley, here to share with you insights, inspiration, and interviews on what it means to become a remarkable soul. Today's topic is a big one, and it's something that is not talked enough about in our culture. And there's many levels and dimensions to this and how it affects us. Grief. What do we do with the loss? Because that's part of our human experience. We have it. Especially, how do we handle the loss of someone special to us? I'm offering this interview in honor of my youngest brother, Sid Williams Ribley. He died when I was 7 years old. He drowned in our family pool. I don't know if I understood the enormity of the grief that my mother and father, especially my mother, went through at that time. As I became a mother, that chord just struck deeper and deeper. I remember when my son was 9 years old and I saw him walk in the house in his baseball uniform after practice, and it reminded me of that day many years ago when my oldest brother walked in our house dressed in his baseball practice uniform and asked where our little brother was. And he was the one who found him floating in our family pool. We did have an alarm system, and it was in the middle of being repaired right at that particular time. And how do we process, integrate, handle these life experiences? When something falls out of the natural order, it can feel like we've been robbed or the loss was not supposed to happen that way. Grief is a very interesting experience with our human life. It can also be very gripping and debilitating if we don't know how to process the energy. I know for my parents, one of the things that probably passed on to our family is that on the day of his death, which is today, anniversary-wise, my parents didn't talk about it. My mom always retold the acknowledgement of his life on the day of his birthday. And every year she would say how old he was. I admire my parents. They helped touch many lives for the different hardships and transformative processes that they went through, from my accident to losing a child. My capacity to have compassion, understanding grows the older I get, and the more that I've understood what they have lived through, the same as I'm on my journey. In March of this past year, during my Beautiful Bold business event, Brand Alive, I met Nikki Jones. And when I learned about her business, which was helping others have a nurturing space to heal and transform and integrate through their grief, through community and practice and techniques, I said to her, I've got to have you on my podcast. And it seems as if this past 6 months, I've had so many of you reach out to me, feeling the heaviness of some grief from losing someone special or loss in some capacity. So I'm honored to offer you this interview with Nikki Jones, as we explore deeper the conversation that's not brought into the light and talked about enough on what it means to be in a place of experiencing grief and loss. And I hope it finds any of you who have recently been trying to find your way through some experience with grief and loss. May you find comfort and nurturing in this interview. Hello, everyone, and I'm excited to share with you today an interview that I'm doing here with Nikki Jones. She is a leader, an empowering teacher, helping others, nurturing you through grief. Did I got that right, Nikki?
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I came across, learned about your work, and I'm like, I have got to bring this to the show because you talk about a conversation that's not talked enough about for healing in our culture, which is grief. Mm-hmm. So tell me what brought you to this work with helping others, nurturing others through their grief.
It started with my own grief journey or grief story. I'm not sure if I love the word grief journey, but it started about 14 years ago when my boyfriend at the time was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer. And within 6 months, he died. During that same time, my mom, who growing up was like the textbook definition of a soccer mom, somehow, because of childhood trauma and a bunch of other things, became severely addicted to alcohol and crack cocaine in Costa Rica.
And that happened out of the blue or unexpected?
So when I was about 15, she started drinking. I think she was probably drinking before that, but it's when I really started noticing, because I think I became more aware as I got older. But also her dad died, and that really triggered a lot for her.
Okay.
So she became like a very high-functioning alcoholic for like my last few years of high school.
Okay.
Yet she still maintained the total soccer mom. You know, she was like the perfect mom that brought cupcakes to school and drove everyone in the minivan, and, you know, she was that mom. So it was pretty unexpected when she started doing crack cocaine. I was really like, what? But it happened.
Yeah.
And right after my boyfriend died, I went down to Costa Rica because I needed my mom, basically.
Right.
And what I found was her really sick and really addicted to drugs and really an alcoholic. And
how old were you at this time?
24.
Okay.
And so that was a really quick kind of thing too, where within 6 months of that, she died.
Wow.
So she ended up going to jail and getting deported. And it was this crazy long thing that I was very involved with, trying to get her back home and out of jail and back on Canadian soil.
Yeah.
And not very long after she came home, she died. She drowned, and we think it was probably a suicide.
So that was within a year, basically, those events happened?
13 months.
13 yeah. months. Wow. That's a very short span yeah. to go through that level of intense loss. And also to have it under such emotional terrain.
Yeah, it was really hard.
So then what happened for you? Like, where does this work that's so profoundly important in this world to just address this about grief and our healing process? So where did it begin for you? I'm not trying to take you back or
no, it's okay. I don't mind.
Okay.
I'm good to go back.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So what was your time frame of just feeling like this pain and this loss, and what happened? Because, I mean, the world goes on and people yeah. expect you to just... I think sometimes people don't know...
They don't get it.
Yeah. So what happened with you? I mean, did people... Did you have a good support system or not really?
I mean, I think I had as good a support system as one could hope for. I had really good friends and a really great family. And at the same time, they didn't get it.
Okay.
I was 24, so my friends didn't understand what it meant to be a widow.
Yeah.
And most of them hadn't really grieved a big loss. And my family is kind of the kind of family that doesn't talk a lot about the hard things.
Okay.
But they were all there for me, and I knew that I could call on them if I needed them. But I think in this culture, we're kind of expected to move on really quickly. And, you know, regardless that there were people around, I still felt really, really alone. I felt like no one got it, and that I wasn't able to grieve in an authentic way, and that I should just get over it. And in the beginning, I just kept really busy, which is kind of a thing people say to do. I don't necessarily agree with it now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I didn't know. And so I was in university and I had a full-time job and I was super busy. And in some ways, having that routine was helpful to to kind of ground me. But in other ways, it, I think, postponed the inevitable.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was a mess back then, even though I was showing up to school and work and looked fine on the outside. Inside, I was like dying, basically. That's what it felt like.
You know, that's interesting that, so my mom lost, I lost a little brother. My mom lost, you know, a baby, our youngest of the family. And I always wonder sometimes, like, if she was able to properly, fully grieve. Mm-hmm. I mean, she really wanted to, like, he drowned in our family pool.
Mm-hmm.
And when my mom reached her lowest, she literally said she wanted to throw herself in and drown. And the way that my family got over it was getting lost in serving others, which was, you know, being busy. But I always wonder, I mean, really... Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever really get over it. And I don't know, you know, my mom did move on.
Yeah.
She had other kids. I mean, he was the youngest of six. Mm-hmm. But when you first started talking to me about your work, one of the things that stuck out that I think is really important to talk about is that you said not all grief is the same. When you lose that important person, whatever way it's defined in our own relationship in life, It can be really hard.
Mm-hmm. The hardest part is getting through the loss without that person, especially if that person is the person you would call when you needed support.
That's true. I heard somebody who shared a story who said when he lost his mom, he didn't know what to do because he wanted to call his mom up and say, oh my God, did you hear who died today?
Exactly.
And she, you know, she wasn't there. And that was like really had me thinking, like, it's true what you're saying about that important person, whether you're married to them or not, or whether you're related to them or not. I think also in our culture, if we lose, like, even a close friend and they're that important person in our life, like, people are expected to get over that grief within a short, or to not, like, they maybe shouldn't be in that level of pain. Is that, do you run across that?
Yeah.
That they feel bad.
You feel like a burden.
Yes.
You don't want to make other people feel bad. You're scared you're going to cry in front of them and that's going to make them feel bad. Yeah, I think our culture does try and make us move on fast or even just move on.
I actually heard another person talking about just when we lose somebody in grieving, how it's almost like expected that there's like, well, if it's a child, it'll take a few, you know, 3 to 5 years. Is there, have you heard this? And if it's a spouse, it's this amount of time. And, oh, if it's like a sibling, you should be over it in 6 months. I mean, is there like, I know, is there these
hidden, I've never heard that, but I think it's like,
somebody was kind of doing this timeline to show how ridiculous it is with the grieving process, that there's no space to like honor it.
Yeah.
It's like, there's an unspoken expectancy over when someone should be over a death.
Yeah.
Or a loss.
Or when you should go back to work, or when you should get into a new relationship, if it's a spouse or things like that. I think it makes it so much harder to not have the space and not have the understanding from people of just how hard it really is. And I think that's so much of what people need, is just someone to understand, like, how badly they're hurting.
So you were busy, and no one probably really knew how bad you were hurting.
No one knew.
Yeah.
And I didn't, and like in their defense, I didn't tell them. And in my defense, I felt like I couldn't.
Which brings it to the point that you would like to see more space in our culture to acknowledge, let someone actually be seen for what's really going on.
Exactly.
So you were busy and hurting, felt alone, still isolated. You felt like you had to suppress this part of your pain.
Mm-hmm. And when I did bring it up every once in a while, if I had a glass of wine or something, people would say, oh, you're so strong, and things that almost felt minimizing. But like, oh, actually, because I was like, actually, I'm not. Like, right now, what I'm trying to tell you is that I'm not strong, and that I'm hurting, and I want you to hear me. And they'd be like, but you are so strong. You are. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Please just see me, you know?
I think everybody has the intention when they say that is they just want to
make you feel better.
They want that instant make you feel better. Mm-hmm. I also think people don't know how to handle someone who's grieving. Yeah.
It's really hard because we were never taught in this culture
how to
talk about death and grief and loss, and how to be with someone and how to sit with someone without trying to fix them.
Wow. So then where did you start to realize that we need more of some real truth telling on where someone's at and holding the nurturing space so that they can begin to get themselves in a place of healing?
I think where it first started was when my partner, when he was dying, we did like naturopathic treatment for him after the Western medical system said that there was nothing that they could do. We went and tried other things. And during that time, he was hooked up to an IV for 5 hours a day, getting this natural treatment. And so I would sit with him and read. And I basically, I'm a researcher. I'm like the late night Googler.
Okay.
So I was on Google all the time, you know, trying to see if I could find something to save him, basically. Yeah. And I started learning a lot about Eastern medicine and different kinds of medicine, alternative medicines. And that was kind of my first seed of maybe wanting to do something. I was training to become a teacher. And
boy, were you.
Yeah. And it was my first kind of seed of maybe wanting to do something different when I was reading these about these different things, yoga and massage and, you know, whatever. I was like, maybe that's what I want to do.
Okay.
Because I really resonated with it. So basically what happened is I spent all this time researching how to save his life, and I ended up using that to save my life.
Wow.
And then now I use it to save everyone else's life.
Yeah, yeah. So where was the – because what I love that of the work that you're doing, Nikki, is you actually give people a way to begin to instantly start feeling some relief with the – pain, whether it's silent inside of them, whether in whatever capacity that they're in, they're feeling, debilitated by it, even if nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So what's great is that you, on your website, which I'm going to put all this in the show notes, but I want to talk a little bit more about it, because you can find this at NikkiCJones.com, and it's Nikki with a Y. the letter C, jones.com. And on her homepage, she has a simple tool to get relief starting today, nurturing you through your grief. And so I want to talk about how you came to find the way that you began to help yourself with this.
Mm-hmm. I basically traveled. I mean, I was always a traveler, even before this started happening. But after, I basically traveled all over the world looking for something different because I didn't think that it was what I was getting at home was working for me and what I could read in the books from other countries sounded appealing. So, I did the 3 months in an ashram in India and
okay.
all that. I went to Africa and India and
now, this was after Central your mom America. And your boyfriend had died, right? Because I just want to, I want to be clear on the timeline. Okay, so this was how far after?
So right after my boyfriend died, I went to all the countries in Central America, kind of looking.
Okay.
And then in Costa Rica, because that was also the intention was I needed my mama, so I went
right. there okay.
to find her too. And then I went to Africa, and then I went to the Middle East, and then I went to India and I don't know,
yeah,
a couple years in between each trip, and just started learning more about other cultures and how they heal, and started taking tons of trainings.
Okay,
just started taking yoga training and Thai massage and Reiki and all these okay. different trainings, and in the end, I found what I resonated most was kind of Eastern therapy that focus on whole person wellness, meaning that your grief and your joy is just as important.
Okay.
Your physical, energetic, emotional, intellectual, spiritual bodies all equal and important.
I see this where I really resonated when I started hearing about your work. Yeah.
So I really took a deep dive into yoga and did a ton of different trainings in yoga and yoga therapy and yoga for grief and different things like that. That's kind of the short version.
Yeah. And so you came to like there's five foundational.
Mm-hmm.
How do you call it in the context of your work?
So I work with the five layers of the body for grief healing. So we work to release the physical body, to recalibrate the energetic body, to free the emotional body, to clarify the intellectual body, which is the mind, and to reconnect to the spiritual, the bliss body.
I mean, I am so just respectful of that and the way that you help someone be able to enter into a practice and also get in touch with getting fully integrated back to themselves. But I also found it interesting when I'd learned about your work and I was talking to you is that you had said you don't ever totally get over it.
No.
So,
and I believe that we're meant to. It's part of who we are.
So in that work, I think what's beautiful is someone can actually begin to like rest in their pain, which can also help them rest in their own healing mm-hmm. because there's not something they have to be quickly getting themselves out of.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's that resistance that we do to pain. We okay. push it away. I think that's just adding more pain onto your pain, even though that's what we're taught to do and we don't know any better. And we do it because it hurts.
So how in your work, because you really have helped change a lot of lives with your work on helping people find the nurturing that they're seeking to get when they are experiencing, mm-hmm. you know, this incredible loss and grief. And how do you help give, like, how did you make that connection for yourself to mm-hmm. then be able to hold that space for other people?
I just began, I hate the word self-love. I mean, I don't hate it, but I think it's overused and people don't really know what it means. But I just began to be really compassionate with myself and to really treat myself the way I would treat someone that I love. And if someone that I love was grieving, I wouldn't tell them that it was, they should be over it by now, or that it was silly, or that it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started talking to myself like that. I started telling myself that it was okay that I was feeling this way. And even that little tweak brings a ton of relief, because you're like, oh, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel like that. I started surrounding myself with people that got it. I met a lot of friends that have been going through similar situations, talking about it with people who got it, and being in community with people who got it.
That's what you've done that's been so phenomenal about your work, is you've actually created a community where you say, I let someone be seen for exactly where they're at, for exactly what they're feeling in that moment, and to be safe enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you started surrounding yourself. And then where did these practices kind of intersect with, in a way that you can now teach this to other people?
I started doing a ton of yoga, and I realized that when I was done taking a yoga class, even if it wasn't a yoga for grief class, I felt better. And I felt more connected to myself and to the bigger world or universe. And I don't know, for me, it just worked. So I wanted to help others.
So would you say that it was, through the course of distilling what was the most effective ways for you that helped you?
I think I realized that I needed to heal in a whole, my whole self. So that it couldn't just be, you know, in the beginning I would take walks, and that was really great, and that was good for connecting to nature and moving my physical body and getting to the grief to move in a certain way. But I started to realize that I needed more than that. I needed to work with my mind and my energy. And
okay, because that would have been one of my questions. So yeah. To be walking and getting the, and just moving, allowing the grief to move around, not telling it has to be gone, but mm-hmm. allowing it to move. Mm-hmm. Would there be something you'd be telling your mind, or is that what you came to realize? And so this is how your work integrates these aspects.
I think it's like a mix between what I learned mm-hmm. from my teachers,
mm-hmm.
From yogic philosophy, which has been around for 2,500 years or mm-hmm. more.
Mm-hmm.
So realizing that this is a really legit science.
Mm-hmm.
And so then taking that and trying it on and seeing how it felt for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing that really, the tools and practices that I learned really worked for me. And then just thinking, well, if they work for me, they must work for others too. And so offering that, when I teach a class, I always say that this is your experience, and I want you to do what feels right for you and notice how it works for you and make any changes that you need. Basically, I just want people to experience it and see if it works for them. I'm not going to tell them what to do.
Yeah, so when people are in your arena of teaching, because you use meditation, you use yoga, what mm-hmm. other? Breathing, I think you had said to me.
We do a lot of breathing, we do a lot of meditation, and we do some postures.
Okay.
Depending, you know, if someone has stuck grief in their heart, postures really work.
Okay.
I can tell you a really good story about that if you want.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after both my mom and my boyfriend died, I'm just thinking back, it was kind of a long time ago.
Yeah.
I started feeling physical pain in my heart. That's really normal when you're grieving.
Okay.
The heart feels like it's breaking. So I thought that, you know, that was a normal part of my grief, and it is. But I didn't do anything about it. and then
because one day, we don't know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so this
we don't talk about it.
And right.
We don't know. We don't know what's normal because no one talks about anything.
Right. Okay.
So I went to the doctor just for a normal checkup, and she noticed that I had like a heart palpitations.
Wow.
And I was like, well, isn't that normal? You know, I'm going through all this grief, and isn't that normal? And she's like, well, let's just get some more tests. And in the end, it turned out that it wasn't normal, and I ended up having to go wearing that Holter monitor thing and going to tons of doctor's appointments for like 2 years. And the doctor in the end basically said, you have to start taking beta blockers, and there's no way that this is going to be fixed without surgery. And but deep down in my heart, I knew that it was from grief, because I didn't feel that way before, and it came with a grief. And so I knew that it was from grief. So I just started doing what I learned in yoga, and I started doing heart opening postures and breathing. And I basically started, gave myself a little prescription, and within a year I went back to the—
So you gave yourself, you said, okay, I'm tapping into the doctor within me, and here's your, Nikki, here's your prescription. You're to do this heart opening posture poses, right?
A couple of them, yeah, that I did.
And then
one that was a little more gentle for the days where I felt really like I didn't want to open too much.
Okay.
It'd be too hard. So I would do a really gentle one, just be kind to myself and do just a little bit.
Okay.
And then on days when I felt a little more, okay, I can do this, I would do a deeper one. All the while doing like really powerful breathing into the heart. Anyway, long story short, the last time I went to the doctor, he said that I whatever you're doing, keep doing it. You don't need to come back here.
Wow.
So I'm not telling that story to scare people to think like, you know, if I don't do anything about this heart, then I'm going to end up having to have a surgery. I don't want people to think that, because that was just my experience, and it's not necessarily even close to being true for anyone else. But I am telling this story because it shows just how powerful these really simple and easy tools can be. You know, I spent a couple of minutes.
Right. And it also shows how the body can get so back to being debilitated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so grief is very debilitating mm-hmm. on so many levels,
mm-hmm.
on our ability. So that's what's great about all the bodies that you work with in the process that you offer for helping someone nurture themselves through grief. And I know you were very particular about the messaging of that
mm-hmm.
is that it is nurturing someone through grief, because mm-hmm. you don't really fix it. Or what would be like the common language that's used, but it's not really real, that happens with grief?
Well, I think just that you get over it.
Get over it. Okay, right.
And I don't think that we do get over it. I think that we go through it.
Right.
And we continue to go through it. And in the beginning, the waves come really, really fast, and it's really hard, and it feels like you're going to drown. And slowly over time, the waves start coming a little bit slower and a little bit slower and a little bit slower, until eventually there's a little more space in between the waves.
That's what's beautiful about your work, because if someone doesn't have a way to work with those feelings, those waves of what we're dealing with, it can get, I believe, locked into the body.
Mm-hmm.
It can get locked into our emotional body,
mm-hmm.
into our even mental well-being.
Mm-hmm. And into all the bodies.
Yeah, into all the bodies. I mm-hmm. totally am 100% in alignment and agreement with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so your work allows someone to just recognize and have a practice mm-hmm. and a technique in order to, and there's different levels. That's what I like too. There's different access ways that you can, mm-hmm. with the work you do, you can access your own healing. It's not like you have to do one thing, because you offer
mm-hmm. lots of different things,
different techniques, mm-hmm. and you have people. And one of the biggest things that you say is do what you're comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
because that's your act of self-kindness,
mm-hmm.
which also initiates you being able to drop into a place where you're no longer resisting what's happening that keeps the pain like frozen and locked inside.
Exactly. So yeah, the tools that I offer can help you. I sometimes use this analogy that the tools are kind of like the surfboard that help you kind of ride the wave. So if you're out at the mall, for example, and all of a sudden a song comes on the radio and you lose it.
Wow. I mean, I just got chills when you said that, Nikki, because I think that's how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like we hear something or see something or feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, this thread that connects to all of that life with that person mm-hmm. becomes like a tsunami almost mm-hmm. in a sense that it can take us down and, in that moment.
Yeah. And often you're not in a safe place to really express that.
Right.
You know, it's happened to me so many times. The one that stands out in my mind is I was on the escalator at the mall in Christmas season, and Christmas is always hard because there's all right. these memories attached, and it only comes once a year, so you don't have a lot of time to integrate.
Right.
But I had arms full of bags, and I was going down the escalator, and this my mom's favorite Christmas song came on, and I just lost my shit, basically.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say shit? Sorry.
Well, either way, I lost it. You could. Let's try that. We'll see you either way.
Okay. So I came down the escalator and I lost it. And it's not a particularly safe place to integrate my grief. So I wish I had, you know, a simple tool like the ones that I offer that could have kind of relaxed me in that moment a little bit more so that maybe later on I could integrate in a safer space at home.
Wow. I mean, that is so powerful because what it does is it gives you a way to not get completely disoriented from yourself in that mm-hmm. moment. And it also gives you a way to not be rough on yourself mm-hmm. so that you don't have a chance to like...
So instead of being like, no, resist, right. which is just adding more pain, really.
Right.
It's more like, okay, I'm going to do this practice that's going to connect me to my true self
mm-hmm.
and allow this feeling to feel a little bit softer so that I can maybe go home later on and integrate it when I'm in a safer space.
That is so beautiful. I really hope that anyone who's listening right now and who's been struggling with grief over anybody that they lost, somebody as that significant person is. What I love how you said that, Nikki, because it's like it doesn't matter where the loss comes from, because I think our culture kind of thinks places these level of importance on these relationships, on how much grief we're allowed or how much pain we should be in over these losses, but it's mm-hmm. that significant person. Mm-hmm. I really hope they go to your website, which I'm going to have in the show notes, and just begin to give themselves mm-hmm. a tool to instantly feel relief or to have access to even mm-hmm. know what to do.
Yeah. So that, yeah, those are the tools. They help you get relief. And then the practices, I say, are like kind of like your anchor to ground you and anchor you.
Is that to get some sort of, and I know this sounds, I don't want to make it sound like a, get some momentum, but I don't want to make it sound like it's a, like a, get it, you know, get over it. Yeah.
It's more just to create more calm between the waves.
Okay.
More,
embrace, so when, like so, more of an embracing space to it.
Yeah. So when we grieve, we are sympathetic or parasympathetic. Sorry, I'm getting them confused. When we grieve, our sympathetic nervous system, our stress response is really high.
Okay.
And when our stress response is really high, it's hard to heal. It's hard to drop into healing. So the practices kind of help to bring you down to a calmer state.
Okay.
In between.
Yeah.
You know, the waves are still going to come.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get triggered by anything.
Yeah.
And that's where the tools come in. But the...
So in your work that you've done, so you did this for yourself and you started to really see that you were finding something that was helping you. Not only that, then eventually you got to a place that you could say, and you actually the unique way in which you've put things together and that you share with other people and you create a community this way came because there was nothing out there that you could find.
Yeah,
you were getting bits and pieces, but you never saw something that gave you like a holistic,
yeah,
a whole nurturing way and space yeah. to like.
Basically, I just created what I wanted and needed.
Yeah.
Basically.
So then what have you seen in the, you know, because you've helped a lot of people with this. And what have you seen with the people who've come into your work, mm-hmm. the difference it's made in their life with at least processing their grief?
Mm-hmm. I think the number one thing people say to me is that they've never felt so heard or so understood or so supported. People also often say that I'm really good at putting people at ease. So when it's such a challenging topic to talk about, they felt safe and able to go there. I think that my clients come out feeling a greater sense of connection to themselves and mm-hmm. to the world, and they often want to go out and help people. Mm-hmm. A lot of my clients have started their own healing practices.
Wow.
I have two girls actually that met in one of my programs that have become best friends and now have their own grief podcast.
Wow. Okay. That's beautiful, Nikki.
That when they connect to themselves and allow themselves the space they need to grieve in a loving and compassionate way, in the end, they end up wanting to go out and share that with others.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's powerful. Mm-hmm. If you were to say right now to a listener who is in the grips mm-hmm. of a grieving process, mm-hmm. some important words, what would that be right now?
Even though it doesn't feel like it, you've got this.
Had you heard those words before?
No. Honestly, in the beginning, thought that I would never get out of this.
Really?
I would never be different. That this was new normal and I was going to have to live the rest of my life feeling that way.
With that ache. Mm-hmm. Do you still have the ache?
Sometimes. When my son was born, or when I got pregnant with my son, I was really missing my mom.
Yeah.
And that's why I took such a long maternity leave. I took 2 years.
I mean, you could make me cry. Because I saw that movie Stepmom, and that movie
was hard to watch.
Yeah, I mean.
I took 2 years maternity leave because with this kind of work, you know, it's, I feel like I need to be whole, and I shouldn't say whole because we're always whole, but I need to be able to hold space for others, mm-hmm. meaning that I need to feel full.
Yeah.
And when I got pregnant and when in the beginning, when I had my baby, I, apart from, you know, the hardness that it is, anyways.
Right. Yeah. The demands. Demanding. A lot of outpouring.
There was that.
Yeah.
And hugely, I was back. I really missed my mom. And I really felt like I didn't want to have to go through becoming a mom by myself. It's really hard. Like, I just wanted to call her and ask her what to do.
Yeah.
And so I needed to integrate all over again. I needed to integrate who I was and how to be a motherless mother, basically. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to do that.
Right. Yeah.
So.
And I think this is why because that's what I really loved is how you said when we lose that significant person, whoever it is, mm-hmm. we will reach these certain points where we want to, like, reach out to them, share to them when these new chapters open up in our life mm-hmm. or new experiences. Mm-hmm. And even though they're so beautiful and we love them mm-hmm. and we're welcoming it and mm-hmm. we're happy and mm-hmm. appreciative to have all that, mm-hmm. then do you find that people then can get into this place where then they feel bad that they're not, like, happy because they're missing?
Yeah.
Is that common?
I think so. I mean, I think if it happens for me, it must happen for others.
Yeah.
And of course, I've talked to a lot of people about this kind of thing, so I've heard other stories. But the one that comes to my mind is when I got married and how it was this beautiful day and I wanted my mom to be there. And I had already planned another wedding with someone else who died.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Ooh.
So all of that was there on my wedding day.
All yeah.
of it. And it was the most happiest, you know.
Yeah.
Before I had my kid, it was the happiest day of my life. And then I had my kid and that one trumped it. But
yeah.
But one of the most happiest days of my life.
Yeah.
You know.
So you got to embrace it in a way that you didn't have to deny what you were feeling. Mm-hmm. And you got to love where you were. Mm-hmm. And you knew how to not be at odds with yourself or mm-hmm. how to minimize, I guess would be the word, minimize your true feelings or minimize the truth for you.
Yeah, I think what was so great about it was that I was able, because of my practice and because I've done so much work on this stuff, I was able to hold the space for the grief and for the joy. I didn't have to shut the grief off to feel the joy. I was able to be sad that my mom wasn't there. Mm. I was able to think about the other guy that I didn't walk down the aisle with.
Right.
And I was able to think about it and have that be okay and not feel guilty about it. And
wow.
And I was still able to feel the joy.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it has to be one or the other. I think you can have both.
Which that's what you said is that even though someone could be feeling this, you said the one word you would say, you've got this. Mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. Is that what did you say? What were your
got this. even though it doesn't feel like it, because I know it doesn't in the beginning. It feels like this is new normal.
Yeah.
It's not.
But you've got this. That's what
you said.
You've
got this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for sharing. This is such an important topic. And I want to invite anybody that is experiencing a sense of grief in their life over anybody significant that you've lost and you want to find your way to nurture yourself into fuller integration, go to Nikki's website. And I'll also have it in the show notes, NikkiCJones.com, and grab her simple tool to get relief starting today. Anything you want to say in closing, Nikki?
Just thank you. I'm really grateful to be here. And I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to share this with your peeps.
So thank you everyone for listening. Namaste, my beautiful one. Namaste.